Typically, we assume that individuals become inactive around a typical age of 65 years old. And what we argue in our work is that this view misses the fact that individuals are not only living for longer, but they're also aging in better health.
People are at the heart of any growing economy. People drive innovation, they work, they consume. So what happens when populations start to grow old, when the share of working-age people starts to shrink?
Expectations of weak future growth may become self-fulfilling in the sense that it may deter investments in physical, capital, and technologies today. My name is Dian Ureldin. I'm a senior economist in the IMF Research Department in the World Economic Studies Division.
Dian Ureldin is also the author, with Bertrand Gruss, of Sustaining Growth in an Aging World, published in the June edition of Finance and Development magazine. Noha El-Bedawi sat down with Ureldin to talk about his research, which was also featured in the IMF's latest World Economic Outlook.
So why is the demographic drag an issue, and what does this mean for the global economy?
So to understand the impact of population dynamics on economic growth generally, I think it is helpful to first remind ourselves that for any economy to keep growing and to produce larger and larger quantities of goods and services, this would require either an expansion in the inputs to the production process. Think about labor, think about capital like equipment and machinery, and that would be one way to keep output growing. The other option is to have gradual improvements in the efficiency with which these inputs are used in production. And the second part usually comes from technological progress. We can think about better management practices and generally new ideas that would increase productivity over time. So historically, both sources work together and they help power economic growth globally. Now, in recent decades, we are witnessing that the age structure of economies have been experiencing a strong shift. First, there is a rise in the share of older individuals in the economy. And second, there is a contraction in the share of the working age population, those individuals in between ages of like 15 and 64. So over time, this means that maybe a larger portion of the population is going to become economically inactive. And naturally, that reduces the labor input parts of the production process, and that will produce a drag on output. We call it the demographic drag on output. And also, if you have an economy with a stagnant or a shrinking labor force, it may also see maybe a weaker demand for new investments, and that would be another channel, again, that acts as a drag on growth.
So it's a little unusual for the World Economic Outlook to include research on demographics. What's the significance of that?
So yeah, I mean, I can actually take a step back and explain a little bit how we were inspired and motivated to think deeply about that. Exactly 1 year ago, we wrote a chapter on the decline in medium-term growth prospects, where we have been seeing that our medium-term forecasts at the IMF for global growth and for different economies were weakening over time. And that was also consistent with what you see as other forecasters, other international institutions, other private forecasters are also seeing as an outlook. Digging behind the surface, we saw that demography plays a role in the thinking and expectations of the decline growth. It's an important input to the labor, to the production process. Labor inputs are an important input there. And that's what has inspired us to start thinking about demography.
Yeah, I'm pretty curious about that, because the general perspective has been that aging will inevitably lead to lower economic growth. So why should we no longer think that? What's changed?
I think this is a very important question. And my starting point here would be to again mention that economists tend to have somewhat of a gloomy view of demographics, in the sense that the conventional view is that demography's growth, drag on growth is expected to be severe and the fiscal implications alarming. For public finances, for instance, an older population means less revenue that would come from taxing labor income, and also more spending on pensions and healthcare and long-term care. However, this view is based on the premise that age thresholds are fixed and not malleable. Typically, we assume, or this view assumes, that individuals become inactive around a typical age of 65 years old, and actually sometimes even earlier if individuals decide to have early effective retirement. What we argue in our work is that this view misses the fact that individuals can voluntarily choose to stay active for longer in the workforce and have longer careers.
In your article, you say that the 70s are the new 50s. Does that mean people are aging better?
So yeah, people are indeed aging in better health. If you meet a 70-year-old individual today, their physical and cognitive capacities are much better than a 70-year-old that you would have met 20 years ago. So again, our analysis, and this is part of the IMF's World Economic Outlook that was published in April this year, uses data on around 1 million individuals aged 50 years and above in 41 countries around the globe. So this is a large cross-section of countries that encompasses both advanced and developing economies. This is, in my view, a very interesting and rich data set. It includes indicators of measured health outcomes, such as grip strength, lung capacity, and cognitive capability of individuals, like their fluency, verbal fluency, math scores, memory functions, etc., as well as measures of self-reported health by the individuals. It also includes details on their health behaviors, such as whether they're smokers or not, the frequency of their exercise, as well as labor market outcomes or the labor market status of these individuals. Are they retired or not? Are they participating in the labor force or not? Their employment status and their earnings. So as you just said, the data reveals that if you take cognitive capacity, for example, then indeed the 70s are the new 50s. So a person who was 70 just a couple of years ago in 2022 would have the same cognitive health score as someone who was 53 years old in 2000. Of course, here we are controlling for individuals' socioeconomic characteristics, such as gender, the level of education, and also their wealth. If you look at the physical health indicators, again, such as grip strength or lung capacity, or self-reported health, or a more general measure in the literature called the frailty index, you would find a similar improvement across all of these dimensions. However, the magnitudes would vary between them. So maybe just to step back also for a second and emphasize that these indicators, there is a disparity between different groups, of course. So health disparities exist, especially by education status and across the wealth distribution. So keeping these inequalities in mind is important when we think about the labor market.
So what policies would offset this drag on growth, and how could you deal with these inequalities? What kind of policies would help with that?
So the fact that we have better aging or aging better health is good news both socially and economically. Again, think about individuals who, by having experienced longer lifespans, we see a lot of people that get to see not only their children and grandchildren, but aging in better health means even better outcomes for these individuals. They don't just get to see their grandchildren, they can actually play with them, be physically active with them, cook a meal for them. Lots of different positive things to think about. And actually that has an impact on labor markets. So we find in the data that these health gains are associated with stronger supply of labor in the market and the probability of participating in the labor market in supplying longer hours and also in higher earnings. It is also associated with later retirement decisions by these individuals. So over the next 25 years, we would expect this healthy aging trend to add about 0.4 percentage points to global growth. This is not going to be enough to fully offset the drag from demography on growth, which we estimate to be around 1.1 percentage points for global growth over the next 25 years. So without healthy aging, it would have been actually worse than that. But when we come to think now about policies, the policies we focused in our work were mostly related to labor supply policies. And here, our objective was to quantitatively assess by how much they could mitigate the demographic drag on growth. We use a global quantitative model that captures around two-thirds of the world's output and population to be able to think through about these policy scenarios and policy experiments. The first scenario assumes the rollout of further health policies to help countries catch up with those at the health frontier. That is where health outcomes are strongest. The second scenario assumes a gradual increase in effective retirement age. And here, I would like to again mention that the median effective retirement age across the countries that we have in the model is about 2.5 years lower than the statutory retirement age. So there is a margin or some room for gain here. Then the third scenario is more focused on the gender gaps in labor force participation. And we assume that each country makes stronger progress towards closing the gender gap between the participation of men and women.
That's interesting. So what would that mean for global growth?
So we find that these policies could boost annual global growth by 0.6 percentage points over the next 25 years, which is a significant gain for the global economy. Of course, the gains would vary by country. So let me add some color here. Health policies, for instance, would create more impact on growth in countries that are further away from the health frontier, such as China and low-income countries. Policies that incentivize later retirement would yield the highest growth dividends in countries where there's a large gap between effective retirement age and life expectancy. And this will be the case for Greece, Italy, and Spain. For closing the gap in labor force participation between men and women, you would find high growth dividends in India, for example. In addition to these growth dividends, the labor supply policies would also relieve the fiscal pressures, especially in countries with low effective retirement age relative to life expectancy.
And finally, you predict that even with all of this, global growth will still decline. Why is that?
So in the absence of these policies I've just mentioned, our projections indicate a growth slowdown of about 1.1 percentage points over the next 25 years when you compare it to the pre-pandemic average growth. The combined policy I've just described could offset about 0.6 percentage points of that decline. So it's not enough to fully offset the demographic drag. But it is important to note that our work in this WEO chapter focuses on the role of labor supply policies. Now, if we circle back to the process of economic growth more generally, then our analysis, again, has focused only on the role of labor inputs. The second important dimension of the growth process relates to efforts to raise aggregate productivity in different economies. And here, other policies can help. For instance, reinvigorating structural reforms, and more specifically, I'm referring to promoting market competition, improving the flexibility of labor markets, improving access to capital for firms. All of these can definitely help support growth going forward. In addition, supporting scientific discovery and technological progress, and also putting in place the mechanisms that will facilitate the reallocation of labor and capital to be able to flow to the higher productivity firms. These are all margins of policy interventions that can help. So this is to say that the demographic drag on growth is not an outcome that is set in stone. Policymakers have various tools at their disposal to help boost growth, and a key takeaway from our work is that a single policy tool may not be enough, but a combination of targeted and tailored policies could help reignite growth and support productivity growth going forward.
Thank you very much. That was Stiat Nuruddin, senior economist at the IMF's research department.
Thanks for having me.
Again, that was Dia Nureldin speaking with Noha El-Badawi about sustaining growth in an aging world. Look for the article in the June edition of Finance and Development magazine. Go to imf.org/FND. And look for other IMF podcasts on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. You can also follow us on X. Our handle is @IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.